Hello there, welcome again to Seven Laws Blog UK. I am David, otherwise known as Hesed Yahu or Hesediah, and today's post is called The King Continued. Who owns you? That is The King Continued. Who owns you? So a man I highly respect responded to my previous article about the Divine Code's words about the authority of the king. One of these days I may have to write a tribute to this guy. Even when I've disagreed with his stance, he's never rejected me, always shown such patience, even though others have cast me aside, treated me badly, or disagreements have ripped us apart. Anyway, he commented with clarifying quotes from the Divine Code. As it's on my mind, I'll bring the relevant quotes and comments here and then give my thoughts on them. So this is the whole quote. It's quite lengthy, but you know, I'll go through it bit by bit soon. So chapter 14, and sorry, this is from the Divine Code, 3rd edition, chapter 14, Government Authority, Laws of Land Conquered in War. Here we go. 1. Who is considered a valid king? A person who is appointed or accepted by a majority of the citizens of the country to rule over them. If a valid king establishes a valid law for all the citizens of the country, they are legally bound to follow it. But if somebody rules over a nation or a part of a nation despotically, he and all his officials are considered like a band of robbers whose laws are not binding, and any taxes that he takes are theft on his part. Also, please see this important footnote to one of the rules in the topic 16.2, just before the topic you quoted from. Any governing body chosen or appointed by the people of a country has the same authority as a king. Therefore, any country or province, state or city within a country that is run by a government is under the rule of a king. There's footnote 448, which says, this is clear, as the reason that the laws of the king are legally binding is because his authority was accepted by the people of the country, as explained in the wording of the aforementioned Rambam Laws of Robbery. This is also obvious from Rashbam, Bava Batra 54b, and Ritva, Bava Batra 55a, in the name of Ramban, who say that a new decree of the king is not legally binding until the majority of the country's people accept it. This would be the case with any governing group for whom the people of the country accept their rules. This is likewise emphasized in part 8, called the Establishment of Laws and Courts. Topic 1.3. This was posted online on a PDF which was called Establishment of Laws and Courts, which is on AskNoah.org, and it says Gentiles are therefore obligated within their commandment of Dinim to make righteous and beneficial laws that are effective for all the country in all matters between people. The people who write these laws with Gentiles may establish for themselves and the judges who rule on the application of these laws must establish them according to their knowledge of the true needs of the country's population and the establishment of a moral society. The laws must obviously conform to logical and moral standards, and they must not be like the evil and cruel laws of biblical cities of Sodom, on account of which God utterly destroyed that metropolis. End quote. That's the end of that quote. It's quite lengthy, but there's still a bit more. So here's a bit more of another quote of this guy's comment on my previous article. Also, in topics 8 and 9 in the chapter you quoted from, so this is, again, this is a quote from this guy who's commenting on my article. Also in the topics 8 and 9 in the chapter you quoted from, the Divine Code, which speak of the right of a king to sell a criminal as a slave and to enslave the inhabitants of a land that was conquered in war, it should have mentioned the very limited condition in which that applied, which was explained in part 7, topic 9, 10. It only applies to a king whose subjects willingly accept that his sovereignty gives him the legal right to kill people who rebel against him. For example, see the book of Joshua, chapter 1, verse 18, where it says, "The Reubenites and Gadites and the half tribe of Manasseh said to Joshua, 'Every man that shall rebel against your words and will not listen to your commands and all that you order him shall be put to death. Only be strong and have courage.'" Okay, that's the end of the quote. The whole lengthy quote is finished. Good. So, you can see these quotes in the comments section under that previous article. What was that article called again? I forget. I can't remember. Anyway, so let me begin to break this down for myself. So this is a part of the quote, and it said, "Who is considered a valid king? A person who is appointed or accepted by a majority of the citizens of the country to rule over them." End quote. So I say, a form of democracy, huh? Let me combine this with another part of the quote, which said, "Any governing body chosen or appointed by the people of a country has the same authority as a king." End quote. So a government that the majority, the quote-unquote majority, accepts owns everyone regardless of consent. By that I mean regardless of consent of the minority. It's like conquest of the individual. The so-called majority and their king owns the minority. So why do I keep on, you know, saying majority in a limited way? Why do I keep on saying quote-unquote majority or so-called majority? Because this is really a fickle number, an ambiguous and unclear number. It's an idea that's hard to quantify and measure. I remember the Brexit vote, where just over 25% of the population of the UK were the so-called majority who won over everyone else. This was slightly over half of the voting cattle, those who actually voted out of those who registered to vote, that were on the winning side. But this was the so-called majority. This was the voice of Britain, whatever that's supposed to mean, supposed to be. And you don't want to know how many were the so-called majority of the population of America that voted for the establishment of their constitution, the document that many Americans idolize as being the supreme law of their land, even though it gets ignored and interpreted out of existence, even though the document itself has no innate authority whatsoever. That's an embarrassment in and of itself. And it's not as if someone's going to do a poll of the populace to see if the majority accepts the gang that claims ownership. And it's known that to go against the gang called government is death, kidnap, or pain. Government is only a territorial monopoly on coercion and violence believed to be legitimate. So there is a significant chance that a person is going to acquiesce to its demands for simple self-preservation, So this is not volitional free will acceptance, but rather the sort of acquiescence that occurs when a hostage does the bidding of the kidnappers to stay alive. So the standard for a valid territorial owner, majority acceptance, is pretty flimsy. But let's imagine this, 70% of a people group accept a ruler, a government, all of them accepting that gang, but 30% don't. Each individual in the 70% does not have the right to own anyone else, to rule anyone else. Therefore, the whole 70% don't have that right. The 70% say they want to be owned, to be bossed about by the gang. And somehow, that acceptance covers the other 30%. The gang gets to boss everyone around, threaten everyone. And how? Magic. I mean, it's supposed to be in a law. God commanded all Gentiles. That's supposed to lend itself to reason, according to Rambam, supposedly. You can argue that I changed the word king or government to gang. But without the authority, the presumed right to own or rule, what is a king except a bully? A government except a gang? How does it get the authority? From people who have no such authority? Magic is needed, or a clear command from God that is without reason. Both magic and that command would be irrational. But again, think about it. For the ruling class to rule, the majority, according to divine code, the majority, the so-called majority, must accept the claim of territorial ownership. But if truth and morality doesn't depend on numbers, and large numbers of people can be misinformed or ignorant or even immoral, then that makes the nature of rulership questionable. I mean, think of examples: Sodom, Nineveh, Egypt. The majority, really? There's something questionable here. Anyway, what I learned from the Divine Code is that a form of democracy, majority rule over the minority, is needed to turn bullies into government. At least the Divine Code is plain and honest. And it continues, if a valid king establishes a valid law for all the citizens of the country, they are legally bound to follow it, end quote. Now, amazingly again, this does make perfect sense. It may not be morally compelling, but look, see. So remember, a valid ruling class, as I ascertained from the previous part, is a gang that a so-called majority somehow accept as territorial owners. Now, the Divine Code says that the law of the ruling class is legally binding on all. But what is law? What is this law? Well, it's the opinion of the ruling class backed by the threat of violence. So essentially, it's a threat. What does legally mean? What does that word legally mean? Well, it's an adjective form of the word legal, which means having the force of law. Now, let me plug in the meaning of law into that definition. So legal now means having the force of a threat from the ruling class. So what does this statement of the Divine Code mean in light of this? So here's a reformulation of that statement. If an accepted territorial bully gives a so-called valid threat for all the citizens of the country, they are bound to follow it because of the threat. Now that would make sense in many areas of life. Unless you're willing to take the risk of opposing a bully, a powerful one, an accepted one, and thus go against all of those that have accepted him and therefore will snitch or help the bully for the sake of self-preservation or devotion, then the safest thing to do is just to go along with it. Some would say the next line limits the power of the ruling class. The next line of this guy's response, and here's what it says, quote, "But if somebody rules a nation or a part of a nation despotically, he and all his officials are considered a band of robbers whose laws are not binding, and any taxes he takes are theft on his part." End quote. What, despotically? Who would judge whether it's despotic or not? The majority? The individual who has been imposed upon by the majority and its accepted owner? The Jews, would they judge? I'm not exactly sure what is meant by despotically here, or like a despot. See, a despot, a despot is one who has absolute power, one who rules in a cruel fashion, an oppressor, one who subjugates by force and possibly cruelty. But the accepted territorial gang called government owns everything and everyone, according to what the divine code said before, as I highlighted in my previous article. How is that not already absolute? Oh, I can hear someone say it is limited, but it's only by their own dictates, which is called the law. Right, yeah, that makes sense. I'm being cynical again, aren't I? So a territorially accepted bully takes your stuff. Oh, wait there, no. According to the divine code, it's his stuff. Because remember, according to the divine code, the government owns everybody and everything in a certain land, or all the land. So when a territorial accepted bully doesn't take your stuff, he takes his own stuff because he owns everything. Anyway, he takes that stuff in the form of taxes. And that's not theft, according to the divine code. But if he acts like he owns the place when he does it, taking stuff that the divine code says is his anyway, apparently that becomes theft? Really? Well, okay. Maybe he was cruel and forceful, as most governments are when you don't give them their stuff. Remember, according to the divine code, you have no stuff. It's all theirs. Anyway, so now it's theft because he's cruel and forceful, as governments normally are. Remember, I know I'm repeating this, but it's important to say this. Remember, in the eyes of the writer of the divine code, the land and its people are the property, the possession of the ruling class. It can take a man and make him a slave of another man. When children are taken from parents, the children are not the ultimate or primary property of the parents, but rather of the rulers. So the rulers and their agents can do this because they are simply rearranging their own property. And with enough force and indoctrination, enough of the people can accept this. And if they're accepted, remember, it's a valid rulership. So the laws of kidnap and theft and murder only applies in a muted way to government in the worldview of the divine code, especially if they can, if this government can make such acts legal, especially if they can get enough of the people to quote unquote accept it. And the faith that people put in kings and governments, it's that's not too hard for people to accept it. That reminds me of a time. That reminds me that there was once a time when I was on this forum, and so people were complaining that people were driving without a license, a driving license, and they were saying, "Oh my goodness, such a person should be thrown in prison. They're so immoral. This person is terrible." And as I say, all a license is a government taking away what you're able to do and then selling it back to you with a little piece of paper to say, you can now do this. So it's not, a license is not evidence of skill. A license is not evidence of ability. It's just government paperwork. But people put such investment in the power of government that they made this person who did this terrible act, didn't crash into anybody, didn't hurt nobody, but just not having that license made this person immoral and bad. That teaches you how, well, at least that teaches me, sorry, how the power of government can fashion people's mind to make them accept what the government wants them accept, wants them to accept. Anyway, someone's bound to say that this subject matter is obvious and is easily understood and digested. Or, I mean, by that I mean the stuff that the Divine Code is saying, and that this responder that he's saying that he's sharing from the Divine Code, all of that is supposed to be obvious and it's easily understood and digested. And maybe that may be true for a statist, an authoritarian, one who thinks it's okay for one man to tell another man what to do, to force him to comply. It may be obvious for such a person, easy for that person, but I'm not that person. I've backslidden and rejected the faith in the state, in the gang. It's no longer obvious. Another person may say that it's not for me to question or reject, that this is God's law, and that it's only my lot to learn and obey. I mean, it's in the Divine Code, the most authoritative book about the seven laws, and so it must be what God demands. And again, I personally have reasons to doubt that everything in the Divine Code is God's demands upon the Gentile. Anyway, carrying on, to quote, "This is clear as the reason that the laws of the king are legally binding is because his authority was accepted by the people of the country." Which reminds me of what was written earlier. And that said, any governing body chosen or appointed by the people of a country. Now, the problem here is the concept of the people of a country. This statement isn't factually accurate based on other parts of this quote. The people aren't just one singular entity, it's a bunch of different individuals. This thing called the people don't really do anything per se. A set of individuals amongst that group do actions. Now, it could possibly be said that the majority of the people accepted this authority, but I personally don't equate the majority of the individuals of a territory with the statement, the people of the country. If the majority of the people made a choice, then it is limited, then that choice is limited to just that portion. It doesn't magically become the whole thing, the whole people. It reminds me of the statement, We the people, one of the most deceptive statements to be spoken or written. Only a portion of the people normally have anything to do with that statement, yet it is imposed on everyone. People are silenced for such a statement to be transmitted, and that makes it lack truth. So, the quote-unquote people appoint and accept nothing. A certain portion of them do, and then impose their decision forcefully upon the rest. To continue with this quote, a new decree of the king is not legally binding until the majority of the people of the country's people accept it, end quote. This has the same issues as expressed before with majority rule, and I won't repeat myself. And to quote again, Gentiles are therefore obligated within their commandment of dinim to make righteous and beneficial laws that are effective for all the people in the country, or for all the country, in all matters between people. End quote. I dealt with this in my article before about being repulsed about the idea that obedience to authority is part of the core seven laws. To summarize, who judges what is righteous or beneficial? And if it's an objective source, then it's not one readily available to Gentiles. And there's little point in pointing to the divine code as something readily available, because the vast majority of Gentiles don't even know what that book is. So, readily available. It may be there, it may be, but readily, that's another thing altogether. So continue with the quote. Also in topics 8 and 9 in the chapter you quoted from, the Divine Code, which speak about the right of a king to sell a criminal as a slave and to enslave the inhabitants of a land that was conquered in war, end quote. Now, look at that word criminal. Can you see what I'm thinking? What is a criminal? Well, it's one who's broken the law. But what is the law? Do I have to repeat myself? It's just the opinion of the ruling class, backed by force, backed by threat. So the right of a bully to enslave someone who didn't do it as he was told, that's it. That's it. Now, this right is limited by what? Anyway, to continue with the quote, it only applies to a king whose subjects willingly accept that his sovereignty gives him the legal right to kill people who rebel against him, end quote. So again, it's faith. It's faith. So if enough people say it's okay for the king to do it, then it's okay. So it's numbers again, huh? The right amount of people. Oh dear. See, I write this when the news is so thick with politics, when people are so soul dependent on the system, so plugged in, when media shoves so much government worshipping tripe down the proverbial throat that I almost choke on the sewage and scum-worthy bile. And I look hopelessly at the herds of sheep around me and imagine that the balance and weight of inevitable human moral well-being is so heavily loaded towards the side of self-destruction, and part of me becomes cold and nihilistic. That doesn't sound right, did it? That's it. It's the fact that the weight of human moral well-being is heavily loaded towards the side of self-destruction in such an inevitable way that makes me like cold and nihilistic. See, I'm correcting myself as I am talking. Even when I attempt to change focus and address my own life, it's extremely difficult not to feel the same way, cold and nihilistic. I can't think of a positive ending to that train of thought. I mean, I have to think about this. Although I'm focused on the words of the Divine Code, I already know that it's not solely the view of the author, Rabbi Moshe Weiner, or Wiener. See, I have friends who think it's fine for a person to get robbed by government as long as the victim gets some benefit in return for this act of coercion. Fine, it's fine for the government to impose on one person's ability to get tools for self-defense, to threaten them against owning certain items or using medicines they deem helpful, but that the government doesn't. I remember being told that a city was now safe only because of government. Praise government. One person one person even told by someone that people being coerced and restrained, not prisoners, yeah, this happened to me. People being coerced and restrained, not prisoners, not immoral people, but the everyday person, that it was a good thing. And that is to say, I think that person was saying to me that it's better for most people to be in slavery. That's what they were essentially saying. This person was telling me that it's better, and it was a Jew, of course. Sorry, that sounded wrong. Well, actually, sorry, but there's so much statism amongst what Jews teach, what a lot of Jews teach, that I shouldn't even be hold back on saying that. It's not anti-Semitic, it's just a fact. With so much statism in what a lot of Jews teach, then I shouldn't be surprised that there is a Jew amongst them that will say that it is good for many people to be enslaved. See, most of the people around me, Jew or Gentile, in one way or another, treasures slavery and or bullying, the government owning everyone. It would be so much easier for me if I just fell in line and agreed, but I just don't. Anyway, back to the subject. When these quotes and comments were put under my article, there was no need to respond because many of the points in my article remained untouched. But I was tempted to express my thoughts in this manner because it helps me focus more on the weaknesses of democracy. Oh well, life goes on. And that's the end of this post. You know, if anybody listened to this, thank you very much. If anybody did, thank you. And those who didn't, well, don't worry about it. Anyway, thank you everyone for your time. Hope you have a great day, and thanks again. Done.